Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snack Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Jordan is on best. Harper's on Miller.
Play together, they believe. And Caris LeVert is cold.
LeVert back in. Speed. Oh, he's a one-man wrecking crew.
Holiday. Shot clock down to six. Finds Warren.
Welcome to another edition of the Indy Cornrows Podcast. This is your host, Mark Schindler. As always, before we get started today, if you haven't already, please be sure to rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts. And of course, read us over Indy Cornrows. Always want to hear from you and get your feedback. Really excited today to be joined by a good friend of mine, and of course, friend of the pod, Dave Searle from over at the Field House. Dave, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing great. Play a little pickup basketball for the first time in years. So I forgot the wooden rules of success, the very first rule, which is, you know, double up your socks and tie your shoes really tight. I forgot about that part of playing basketball, and so I wore kind of regular running shoes, and they were loose. No. And so I'm in blister city right now. It's been that long since I played. I just forgot about that part of it. So made one too many cuts, I guess. So. Yeah. But it was good. It was good to get some shots of it. I mean, you know, they left me wide open, which is, you know, a little humiliating. But I did take the shots, and that's all you can ask for.
That's part of the battle, man. At least they have to know. They know that you're there. So
yeah, I grabbed a little rim too, so I feel pretty good about that.
You're just like Goga. You're just going to keep shooting until it goes in. And it's eventually it will. It's probably the prettiest jumper in the gym. It just, you know, it's not hitting right now.
Just like Goga. I get that all the time. They're like, are you Goga?
You might be Goga. I mean, you're 6'4", so you're close enough. That's getting there. Only a few inches off from 6'11", so it can't be too far. No, the last time that I actually hooped, I ruined my favorite pair of shoes. It was awful. I went to play with just a bunch of guys who really don't play basketball. So I was like, oh, it won't matter. I won't go that hard. That was wrong. I dove for like balls and stuff. I have a problem with that. But what were they? They were like, I love Jordans personally, but not like high top Jordans. I like low top, like some of the new, like just athletic wear Jordans are cool. I like those a lot. But they're expensive, and I only get like one pair of shoes a year, which sounds so bougie when you put it like that. But like, point being, this is like my one pair of shoes for that year.
Sure.
All right, gonna be really careful with these. I just moved too quick laterally, and they couldn't contain themselves, and I pulled a Zion, and my foot just like went out the side of my shoe as I slid with somebody. And so that was the last time I hooped, and it's probably gonna be a while before I do it again because I'm just too worried of destroying my shoes. But
that happened to Matt Bonner. Do you remember that?
See, I'd rather compare myself to Zion than Matt Bonner, to be completely honest. But now that we're there, maybe I am closer to Matt Bonner than Zion. But you know,
he had a shoe sponsorship with New Balance.
Oh yes, so, I definitely want to be more what like Zion than Matt Bonner. Some of the New Balance shoes are actually kind of cool now that Kawhi's there, but Puma's really been taking over. I don't know if you've seen the Puma stuff, but like Puma's legit. They actually like have good basketball shoes now. I know some of my friends who are bigger with hoops, at least with shoes, because I can't afford to be invested in basketball shoes because that's like a whole other thing.
Yeah, but I don't really keep up on sneakers anymore. I'm in the market for some now that I have blisters on my feet. Check it out. You know, it's Puma. It's the brother of Mr. Adidas. They were brothers, and they started a separate company. So, you know, hopefully a little bit of that Adidas basketball shoe expertise is a swapping stories at Christmas, maybe picking up a few tips, you know, eventually that's got to bleed through and make them put up a quality basketball sneaker.
Yeah, definitely, man. I agree. Well, all right. So just to get started today, I know you had actually brought up that you wanted to talk about something on pod. I know a little bit, but let's just dive into it. What do you want to dive into today, man?
Well, yeah, you know, because I had seen that you talked quite a bit on Twitter. You've mentioned this several times about, and, you know, I want to let kind of you serve it up in your own words, but basically the idea that, you know, individual players are kind of who they are. They have certain individual quirks and they have certain things that they do on a court. And we sometimes lose sight of all of that and reduce people to not just a stat line, that's not fair, but like kind of like a strategy, like how effective is this person towards winning games? And if it's not 100% optimized, then nothing that they do matters, and how that does a disservice to the sport of basketball, like in the appreciation of the sport of basketball, that's gone too far in that direction. And and I thought that was an interesting topic. I think about that a lot, and I think it's very funny in a way to see where we are now from when, like, I started my podcast 10,000 years ago, whatever that was. How differently it's sort of gone, you know, the human race, human culture is a pendulum, and it started way in one direction and it feels like it's in the other direction. And I think that's interesting. So serve it up to you a little bit and kind of want to dive into that, cause I think it's one of the more interesting things to talk about basketball right now.
Yeah. We can definitely relate to the Pacers too, because I think there's stuff that can come in with there. A lot of it for me actually is just like trying to be a national analyst and viewing everything around basketball. Like, I grew up, two of my favorite players, like, obviously I love Danny Granger, is probably my favorite basketball player of all time. Like, I love J.O. But like my guys that I watched all the time growing up were DeMar DeRozan and Rudy Gay. And
those are two good ones.
Yes. Those are perfect examples to bring up. Like, Rudy Gay, for when he was in Toronto, was like the worst stretch of his career by far. And this is, I mean, I believe this was reported. I don't have who reported it, because this came out in like what, like that was like 2013, 2014. So, I mean, he vehemently was against stat sheets being in the locker room because of how often it was talked about that he was not an efficient player and that it was tanking the Raptors season. And it's funny too, because that's the kind of thing that's happened a lot with DeMar as well. Like, you know, a lot gets brought up with them. It's actually really interesting because DeMar's had one of the better seasons of his career this year, but people just haven't noticed it as much because the Spurs have been, I mean, first of all, it's San Antonio. So people are, San Antonio is like, they feel very much Pacers South to me, except a lot more winning at the highest level. It helps when you have Tim Duncan, believe it or not, but
They're one of the great dynasties of NBA history. Exactly. And it still feels like they're a small market team. That's how much it matters.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just, it's the kind of thing that really, I don't want to, like, I understand the importance of efficiency and winning. But at the same time, there's a lot more that matters to basketball to me than winning. Like, the amount of times that I threw on a game and watched Rudy Gay, you know, face up from 18 feet out and drive, have an awesome slam, or just hit some kind of post fadeaway, watching DeMar work from the mid range and just like, he moves so fluidly. Like, there's something about the aesthetic of the game that matters, and it shouldn't just be about efficiency. And like, it's important. Like, again, I never want to throw out that it's important. Like, I understand the importance of winning, but I do think we overshadow that sometimes. And a lot of times it gets put on with Rudy and DeMar. Like, it's a little bit different for DeMar because he was an all-star. I do think this is my hot take always, is that one of Rudy's years in Sacramento, he should have been an all-star over Dirk, because Dirk just got grandfathered in multiple times and it was annoying to me. But he was on a winning team, and, you know, it just depends on how you view it. But like, that's part of the thing with like DeMar DeRozan. He led him and Kyle Lowry to me are just like synonymous. I always think of it in terms of being a symbiotic relationship instead of trying to say one guy was better than the other, because I think that's just a fruitless argument most of the time. Like, counting stats really don't mean shit in terms of what we're trying to debate. It's just like, DeMar's probably having a harder time if it's just him. Kyle Lowry's not getting you there if it's just him. Like, it's two guys working together. And we just have this tendency to throw out, like, I mean, he was part of the greatest Raptors team of all time. Of course, they don't end up winning a championship, but he averaged like 27 points per game on league average true shooting.
To that point.
Yeah.
The greatest to that point, of course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. To that point, for sure. For sure. Yeah. And like that. So it makes it like it makes a difference. And but then, you know, they lose to LeBron in the finals. I mean, not the finals, Eastern Conference Finals. So everyone's like, oh, well, DeMar sucks. DeMar this, DeMar that. And yes, he hasn't been good in the playoffs. He's never really been good in the playoffs. He's always struggled there. But I just think you can't throw out what a guy does during the regular season, even if it's not at the quote unquote highest level. Like, some of the things that I've gotten the most out of in watching basketball happen, you know, on those teams that aren't at the highest level. Like this year, I've loved watching the Charlotte Hornets more than just about any team in basketball. And they're not, I mean, they're going to lose in the first round of the playoffs if they make the playoffs. But like, that doesn't mean that it doesn't matter what they're doing. Like, maybe it's not perfect, but I don't know. I guess so. That's where I really come from on it, because it just, it bothers me how much we like rewrite a guy's career, or have just like these, all of our own analysis and everything baked into what they're doing, when we don't take into context a lot of things. Like, Rudy Gay's never been on a good basketball team outside of like, a couple of years in Memphis. Like, they were solid, but I mean, he's part of the reason that they ended up being the Grit and Grind Grizzlies is because they transitioned away from him and moved him to Toronto. Like, I don't know. I just think that there's something to being good, but not great. And we really discount that. Like, you're either the best role player or the best star, or you don't matter, or what you do doesn't matter enough. Like, scalability. I don't know if I'm sure you're familiar with the term, like how a guy scales to winning. I think it's important, but it shouldn't be everything. Like, I get really frustrated when people talk about, like, it's not even just DeMar DeRozan, like Donovan Mitchell. Like, I love watching Donovan Mitchell play basketball. I don't think that he should be an MVP or anything. Like, that's duh. But like, I mean, people look at what he's doing and they're like, oh, well, he's just not that good, or he's not this and he's not that. I'm like, dude, okay, at some point you have to stop and say, this guy's a good player. Maybe he's not all NBA or whatever, but he's the leading scorer on a team that would win 60 games in 82. And he just does a lot of really good things, even if it's not at the highest level. Like, that matters for something. So,
yeah, absolutely. It's basketball, it's often compared to jazz in sort of a hackneyed way, right? So that's the basketball is like jazz, man. It's also a joke about jazz music that people say a lot. It's like, it's not about the notes that they play. It's about the notes that they're not playing. You know, that's if you had a cartoon character that was talking about jazz, I'd probably put that line in there. And it made me think a lot about basketball in the sense that it's unique in major pro sports in that, well, one of the reasons why I love basketball so much is that everything counts, right? So, you know, a NFL game, a hockey game might be like 2-1, right? It's same thing with soccer. The NFL might be 21-7, but it's really 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
That's the score of the game, because it's three touchdowns, one touchdown. You know, it wasn't 21 things that happened that they did three things that scored. Basketball is the only sport where, you know, the final score is going to be, you know, 100-100. Really, the score is more like 50-40, because it's about 50 made buckets, 40 made buckets. I mean, you've got threes in there, you've got three throws, and we know how all that works.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many things that do count that it amplifies mistakes. So when you don't do something that is way, way more important in basketball than it is in any other sport. You know, if you are playing a game of hockey and you should have brought it over the middle, but you didn't, you went up the side and that ruined an offensive opportunity, that's a bummer. But at the end of the game, like, you probably weren't going to score. That's the overwhelming likelihood of every single possession, is that you're just not going to score.
Hmm.
When you do, it's an awesome success and you break that down, that's a whole nother sport. But with basketball, every time you don't score, it matters, you know, and a lot of games are within 5 points, and like, that's a couple of buckets. So there's this, you take that part of it and how many things count, and then you also add in how much freedom individual players have, It's a thing that's a little bit different than the NFL. Quarterbacks make decisions, obviously, but everybody else, you know, nobody criticizes Ezekiel Elliott for how many carries he gets. There's an analytical argument that NFL teams run way too much. But that's not Ezekiel Elliott's fault. You know, he's just a running back. They said it's a running play. What's he supposed to do? Say, you know what? Actually, it'd not probably be a little bit more efficient to try to go for a 7-yard dig. You know, no one says things like that because that's an insane thing to ask of an NFL player. But with an NBA player, it's constantly happening. Every single moment of when somebody has the ball, there's, you know, 2 to 7 different options of things that they could do. And so this autonomy of the players combined with how much each score matters means that there is a huge emphasis on the decisions that they make that is way different than any other sport. And that's why we get to so many of these conversations where, I mean, like maybe it's like Jay Buhner, the baseball player, he'd do nothing but hit home runs. You might say, well, maybe
Chris Davis. Oh man. Yeah.
What's that?
So Chris Davis with the Orioles is one of my favorite examples. I don't know if you remember him. Like, I mean, I think he still plays now, but like he had this ridiculous season with the Orioles, leads the league in home runs, but I think he batted like 220 or something like that. And then he got the bag. I think he got like a 5 or 6 year deal. And I think he's hit above 200 like once in like the 3 years since then. And it's just been like, yeah, it's rough.
It's if you talk to me, like basically when Bobby Bonilla got the Bobby Bonilla deal, that's when I kind of stopped watching baseball. It's not related. It just happens to be how my life worked out. But like, you know, the Moneyball A's, I watched almost every game that season. And shortly after that, I just kind of stopped following baseball. So, but yeah, it's like if you're not very good going forward, that's one thing. And there are maybe some criticism of a player like even like Itra, like maybe he should try to go for, you know, more power than just kind of constantly getting hits. But this is very narrow stuff. It's not nearly at the level that it is where on Twitter – all of these major brands are saying like Russell Westbrook is, you know, his teams win 75% of his games when he gets a triple double. This argument that Russell Westbrook isn't a good basketball player is just kind of the fact that what other sport would you have to say that? You might say, oh, Peyton Manning, maybe he's not as successful in the playoffs, but he's still one of the all-time greats. And you get a little bit of that, but like the argument is Peyton Manning better than Tom Brady or not? Not like, is Peyton Manning worth it as a quarterback? No one ever makes that argument. And it's really hard to find examples in other sports of like, this guy is putting up great stats and is an all-star caliber player. But, you know, is Julio Jones really impact? You know, those kind of conversations don't really happen in any other sport. And I think that that's kind of interesting where I had a million arguments with people about the Westbrook Harden MVP because it was fun. I like basketball. I like talking about basketball. Mm. It was a fun argument. And I was on the camp of Harden's season was better. Like just because it wasn't around number of 10 and rebounds doesn't mean that he shouldn't get the MVP. I thought it was ridiculous. I argue about that a lot, but I would never say that Russell Westbrook wasn't an impactful player, that he wasn't an awesome player. And most importantly, that he wasn't amazing to watch. You know, he's, to me, definitely top 5, maybe higher in just in-game dunking. You know, anytime he goes up and cocks that shoulder back, he just hits it with such power. I mean, it's like, it's him and Shaq, to me, or Vince Carter. I mean, Vince Carter had a little more grace in that sort of sense, but like with how hard he dunks, he's like one of the hardest dunkers ever. But so many plays that he makes in the passes that he is able to pull off, it's fun to watch Russell Westbrook play basketball. And like, I find myself early podcast day might have been like, hey, you know, he's getting a lot of triple doubles, but you know, maybe that round number isn't quite as big a deal and Harden's been better, all the way to the side of like, wait, are you saying Russell Westbrook isn't good at all? Yeah. I mean, come on. I mean, he's one of the better point guards of all time. He's one of the better players in the NBA. He had some red stretches where he wasn't really shooting super well. He could make better decisions in a way. I think it's entirely fair to say if he had played a little bit differently and held back certain opportunities, maybe his stats, counting stats, go down a little bit, but maybe he'd impact winning better. That's fair to say, but like, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, like have that basketball conversation, but still appreciate what he does. I'd much rather watch him play than Drew Holiday. I mean, just to be honest with you, you know, you might argue that the Bucks are better with Drew than with Russell Westbrook, and you can have that conversation. But like, I'd never rather watch Russell Westbrook play basketball. And I feel like it is gotten to the point where that feels a little controversial sometimes for people to say. And I think that it's gone, you know, sort of in the wrong direction. Another point about that is I think basketball's changed so much. It's also allowed that to come forth a little bit more. Because you talk about Rudy Gay and DeMar DeRozan, you know, I never really thought about that until now that they both were Raptors and then both became Spurs. And like, you know, I think Pop sort of probably saw the same thing. Like, these guys can play basketball. Two things happened. One, I think people's attitudes changed a little bit, but also like they just played better basketball under the Spurs. Just a little bit of tweak here and there with kind of their decision-making and their shot diet ended up making them unlocking kind of their winning potential a little bit. Like, DeMar DeRozan is just playing different as a Spur than he was as a Raptor. That's a factor of it too. You know, he's eschewed a little bit of the long jumpers a little bit more. And that's just not as big a part of his shot portfolio. And I think that we've just seen that ripple through in a lot of players too, where a lot of them just clean up stuff like that. How many jumpers would Sabonis be taking in a different era? I mean, he'd be taking 6-7 a game.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, I think about I think one of the craziest things I ever noticed, like, when I really dove in and watched a bunch of Jermaine O'Neal games for the first time, was mm-hmm. how much he had the ball. His year when he finished, what was it, third in MVP voting? He had a 36% usage rate, which is like, I mean, that would be just about number one in the NBA this year, like close to the top. It would be top 10, I believe.
And I'm catching myself maybe without doing the research. I am going to look it up, but I don't feel like he hit 50% from the field a lot either.
He did not. His like, yeah, I think he barely shot 40% from the field that year.
Yeah.
It was not high. And, but like, but then again, like, cause I know people would go back and be like, oh, well, that's just not good efficient basketball. I'm like, okay, well, looking at that year, who is he? And to say who is he passing to is reductive in a sense, but like, it's just a different era of basketball. Like, mm-hmm. Jermaine O'Neal was really good. He wasn't, I still would consider him just about a great player. Like, he's very borderline for me. Like, I think he's a guy who's like close to being a Hall of Famer, but probably won't get it. If Chris Webber's not in at this point, Jermaine O'Neal is not going to be a Hall of Famer. But like, just point being, like, he was a really damn good basketball player. And I think you put him in today's era and it's like he's doing things in a different way. Like, he got to the free throw line a ton. Like, in 2004-05, of course, that's the short and terrible year. You know, he's getting to the line 9 times a game. Like, that's a lot. And it's 2003-04 is the year, and he shot 43% from the field. Which again, not great, but like he was just a good player. And you can't discount that. Like, in that era, like it just was like, okay, well, let me pull up the 2003-04 team, because Ron is on that team, and Ron was like fine offensively, but he wasn't exactly efficient either. But again, it's like basketball is just different then. It was hard. Like, I think we talk about like a lot, like, oh, well, why isn't he just driving to the rim? Like, well, there's probably 2 7-footers playing on the other team. So how is he getting to the rim is a good question. Like,
you know, it's funny, cause you said, because of the name changes and everything that's happened, you said Ron. I was like, is he talking about Ron Mercer?
Yes. The how could I forget about Ron?
It's like,
Mercer?
Wow. Yeah. You're good. It's like most years of Jermaine O'Neal's career from 2-point range, he was shooting like 43-47%, somewhere around 45, hovering a lot. That just straight up wouldn't fly anymore. There's no way that somebody would give any post player that many possessions with that sort of efficiency. And like, if we're talking about the past, it's a little bit of a separate conversation about how we evaluate the past. But like, wouldn't he not be an awesome like Clint Capella? You know, if he's just constantly rolling to the rim with his athleticism and size, I mean, would he not be finishing off lots of pick and rolls, especially with the floor being spread out the way that it would be in that era? He and Jamal Tinsley could have done that, transported into a modern era where there's 3 excellent shooters around them. I mean, like, 3-point shooting has gotten so nuts in this league that, you know, if you shoot 38%, you're really not that great of a sharpshooter anymore, which is, at that time, you would have been like, you'd be in the 3-point shooting contest if you could do that with a few shots. So that Spacey would be a whole lot different. He'd probably be allowed to operate in a slightly different way. It's taking what a player could do very well, and really kind of appreciating that in an aesthetic way, I think is sometimes something that fans don't appreciate enough. And you mentioned DeMar DeRozan, his ability to operate, and how important that is. You know, it also makes me think of kind of Caris LeVert in the sense that he's got that ability to kind of create space and get off shots, change directions, and get off those kind of tough shots that we can see Pacers have lacked that, especially with when Victor Oladipo is hurt. And, you know, we kind of saw it last night a little bit. I mean, it's nice to have a little bit of that mixed in. Mm-hmm. I hope that LeVert goes through that kind of shot diet school, I think, and unlocks the rest of that potential of it, his ability to kind of shoot off of the dribble and create space, is something that, you know, you could talk all day about Malcolm Brogdon's 50-40-90 and, you know, how smart he is and how good he is. He's a great player, but he just can't really do that sort of thing. And that's something that might be more valuable for the Pacers long term. But it's, you know, when you have moments like that and you see LeVert hit those step back threes, and, you know, you don't have to think about his shooting percentage over the last, you know, 30 games to be able to kind of appreciate that.
Yeah, no. And that brings up such a great point too, because I have gotten a little bit frustrated in recent days. I try my best not to get frustrated with the fan base, but like I've seen multiple people say that,
it's one of my favorite parts about being on Twitter is being frustrated with the fans.
Yeah,
like,
I try really hard.
I try so hard to be
positive all the time, man. But it's like, I mean, people are throwing out that Caris right now is better than Victor ever was. I'm like, that's just not true. Like, I mean, did we watch 20? I mean, like, 2017-18 Victor Oladipo was a borderline top 10 player. Like, he was that good. And I think we discount that, and especially too, because like he did a lot, no offense to Caris, but he did a lot more defensively than Caris is doing right now.
Yeah. And especially in the first half of that season. Yeah,
exactly. And that's not even to slight Caris at all. It's just like, it's important to keep things in mind. Like, and also too, I mean, they're playing a completely different pace right now. So I think I would have to adjust the numbers out for pace. It's probably like still similar. But point being, like, it's just it's a little bit different. But I mean, Caris' stretch since like the last 11 or 12 games has been absurd. Like, I mean, yeah. I think he's averaging 25 over the last 3 weeks of basketball on pretty good efficiency. But exactly, like, and I think it's easy to talk about it like this, but then, you know, people can just boil it down to, oh, well, Caris is just isn't efficient enough. And it's like, at the same point, there's a reason for that. Like, there's a reason why LeBron James is one of the most efficient players in basketball, because he can be. Caris LeVert, like, there are ways where he could be a more efficient player for sure. Like, he could cut out some of the pull-up stuff, but like at the same time, the Pacers need him to hit those. Like, they need, like, they don't have guys who can create a ton of separation on their own, or guys who can get to the rim at will. Like, Malcolm can get to the rim, but finishing there is a whole other thing. Yeah. It's better for him when he's off ball, and we've seen that. But like, point being, it's just like, it's so like, that's why I get frustrated in looking at this top down. Like, when you talk about guys like DeMar, or like, and DeMar is like at a whole other level than Caris is at, or was, I should say. And like, same thing with a guy like Rudy Gay. Like, they are capable of being really good at what they're doing, but maybe not quite great. And there's like nothing wrong with that. And I just don't like, it's frustrating that we have to like parse it down so much. And cause like, so many people look like, even like, I try and just be in the middle, like, cause then I've seen people who are outside of like the Indiana's perspective and saying, oh, well, Caris LeVert's just doing what he does, putting up a lot of points on a bad team. And I'm like, well, even then, that's just entirely reductive. Like, it's not just like meaningless crap that he's putting out there. They've won a bunch of these games because Caris has played really well, and he's putting the team on his back and doing a lot of heavy lifting that has been required of him. And like, there's something to it that matters. Like, no, it's not. Are you going to win a title with Caris LeVert as your best player? No. Like, that, I mean, the odds of that are like 5 to 10%, you know, just not high, probably even less than that. But like, point being, that doesn't matter to me. Like, he's just good at what he does. And I think there's something to being good, even if you're not great. Like, it's whatever.
Yeah, that is very true too. It made me think of, you know, when you talk about Donovan Mitchell, where I feel like sometimes teams even do this, and especially fans, lose sight of the fact that you know, some of these plays that they're trying to make are very, very tough. And they, it takes a lot of mistakes, even, you know, in the context of a game, to be able to kind of get that feel and get it right. Mm-hmm. But when you do get it right, it is one of the most impactful ways that you can, you know, create shots off the dribble. It's one of the most impactful things that you can do. Coaches talk about this all the time. I do believe that it's very true that in the final minutes of a game, and in playoff games kind of extended further into the game because of this, referees stop blowing the whistle. You know, if you want to score, you're going to have to do a little bit more than, oh, a guy bumped me, you know, I'm going to get a foul. You're not going to get that foul call anymore. So now you have to kind of create a little bit. And I feel like Donovan Mitchell is a little bit more of a project for the Jazz, where, you know, the Gobert does what he does. Jingles does what he does. Bojan does what he does.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Shout out Bojan for his 50-piece, man. Just about 50-piece. I think it was 48 points. That was awesome to watch. I don't know if you watched that, but I watched
it. I didn't see it, though.
It was so great. Yeah. I love watching Bojan play. When he gets cooking, it's fun.
But Donovan Mitchell is going to do stuff that – I mean, like when he was going, you know, toe-to-toe with Joel Murray, I mean, like Joe Ingles isn't going to do that.
Exactly.
You know, it's not going to happen there. And, like, you need a little bit of that, and there's going to be mistakes that come with that. It'd be awesome to have LeBron, like you said. It'd be awesome to have Kevin Durant. But if you want to win games and raise that ceiling, you got to allow players to do that a little bit. And I think that that's part of the journey too, you know. And once he realizes what the good two moves are going to be and kind of cuts out some of the things that aren't working as well, that's a project worth doing long term. And it's a skill that even if someone is, you know, 3 years in to a career and they're taking a lot of shots like that, if that per shot average is real low, maybe it's a little concerning. Maybe you say long term they might have to change the you know, how, the context of what they're going to be on the team a little bit, but you could still appreciate the fact that they have that talent, you know. Yeah. And so it's like sort of the Carmelo Anthony paradox, where he probably, maybe in certain situations, probably should have been a little bit better at moving the ball a little bit, maybe kind of had a usage rate that was a little bit too high, but he always had the eternal respect of everybody that plays basketball, because it's like no one can really do that kind of side post moves as well as Carmelo Anthony does. And you can have the two conversations at the same time, where maybe the Knicks would be a little bit better if they did something else. Maybe he should adjust it a little bit, and also acknowledge that he's really, really awesome at isolation basketball. Like, you know, I feel like anytime someone says like, well, yeah, I mean, he could do that, but he's not winning, so who cares? I just think that that's a really stupid way to look at sports.
It is.
Know, because it's, you know, when you think of all the memories that you've had watching sports, I think it's really hard to say, oh man, you know, I was sitting with my son and it was the first game that he'd ever watched with me. And, you know, George Hill went over the top of that screen. And it was just a beautiful thing to watch. And my son looked at me and said, can I join a basketball? You know, like those conversations don't happen. I love George Hill. I mean, I've fought a million wars online to defend his honor. He's one of my favorite Pacers in a way, but also like, there's an art to the sport, and it's okay to have fun, and it's okay to appreciate someone and the amazing things that they do, even if it doesn't always lead to great winning basketball. And like I said, it's just a weird conversation to have, because it used to be that you're kind of a heretic if you were like, he's really good at isolation basketball, but maybe he should, you know, play a little bit differently to maximize a chance to win. That was the hard thing. And now it's sort of like, it's okay to say Carmelo Anthony's awesome at basketball. Because he is. He's awesome at basketball. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Allen Iverson was incredible to watch. Think of all the players in the era and some of the guys that might have won a little bit more. A lot of memories of them. I couldn't recall specific things, but there's a lot of specific moments of Allen Iverson that I can pull out, and that means something. It's it's supposed to be have fun. This does kind of, hey, let me bring it back into the Pacers a little bit here. I understand that people might want the Pacers to lose out in the play-in games just to get a better draft pick. And yes, that is something that could help them long-term. And then, you know, if they obviously win the lottery, that would be a miracle. That would really help out the Pacers. It's okay to watch one game, enjoy the fact that it's an elimination basketball game, and just have fun seeing them do what they do. You know, and if you think that Nate Bjorkman has made like a small decision on a rotation that you would have put a guy in 2 minutes earlier and you put it in 2 minutes, it's okay to take a break from that and just enjoy an elimination basketball game with a team that you care about. Because at the end of the day, I do think that people lose sight of this a little bit. I think surprisingly on the side of, man, you know, if the team's not doing very well from a team building perspective, it would be kind of cool to see them lose a whole bunch of games and get a top five pick and move on from there. But it's also okay to enjoy a playoff series and enjoy the fact that you're watching meaningful basketball and watching a team kind of go for it all in a game that counts towards the playoff standings. Allow yourself that. Now, when the playing games are done, if the Pacers win couple games and they end up in the first round and then they get knocked out in the first round, once that's done, switch the brain back over to like, man, it'd be cool if they got a draft pick. What are they going to do to build for the future? Is Kevin Pritchard on the hot seat? Should they fire Bjorkgren? Who should be the new coach? All that sort of jazz. Just give yourself a break while the games are happening and just root for a win. And when they do something cool, just enjoy it. That's it, because at the end of the day, you know, like I like watching basketball. That's what you're really in for. At the end of the day, take a break and enjoy it. When someone does something cool, just acknowledge it for being cool. Worry about the team building implications a little bit later. Now, I'm also saying this as someone that now thankfully doesn't have to cover the team in an intense way, and so I skipped a few games. So I got a little bit more of an appetite for basketball than someone that's just been like, oh god, just let the season end, please. I can get that.
Well, you bring up good points too, because I think I want to close out on like our guy Tony East asked Domas a really good question the other day on I don't know if you saw this, but he posted on Twitter of like, you know, how are you guys thinking about like playoff seeding and like the draft picks and stuff like that. I don't mean to misquote Tony. I'll have to link to that. But point being, it was just like asking Domas, you know, what is it like being in your position with where you're at right now, like not guaranteed in a actual playoff game and stuff like that, and how you feel about going about that. And I think it's important point to bring up. And I've talked about this on the pod many times, but like players are not tanking. Like they do not tank. That's not a thing. And I can understand wanting the team to lose out and get a good draft pick, because I know I've seen people, you know, pretty full of ire in some of the games that they've won. And I guess I get that from an aspect of wanting this team to be better next year. But at the same time, like these guys are here now and they're not interested in putting off everything for next year, regardless of the fact that they know deep down, they know they're not going to do anything super symbolic of anything in the playoffs, even if they get there. But point being, like, they're still trying. You know, they, like, some of the guys don't have guaranteed deals next year. They have no idea where they're going to be. They don't know if they're going to be Pacers. So why should they give a shit about what happens with the draft pick? You know, they're like O'Shea Brissett until, you know, 2 weeks ago, what's not even guaranteed to be on a roster next year. Like, I mean, that stuff matters, and you can't discount it. And I ultimately agree with you. Like, I just want the team to, looking at the team, I want to watch them grow somehow together. Like that's the goal every game. I don't care if it's a win or a loss. I just want to see them improve or just progress in certain areas. Like, obviously you want them to win. It's easier to talk about a win than it is a loss, and it's just better overall. But yeah, like that's what there is to look for in the remaining games and where they're headed. And, you know, obviously everything going on in the background makes it a little bit murky, but I agree. Just like turn it off for right now and try and look forward to what's going on for sure.
You know, it's a small conspiracy theory. it's out in the open. Apparently, what's been sort of going on behind the scenes with the coaching and such. I heard, you know, Doug McDermott say, you know, hey, we're going to play for each other and all that sort of jazz. They seem like they're playing with a little bit more kind of pep in their step, so to speak. Do you think that they know that Nate Bjorken is maybe not going to be there next year? And that's part of the reason why that they are playing with a little bit more spunk, so to speak.
That's a good question. I
think it's kind of like, it's finally the elephant has been in the room has been acknowledged. Let's just go out and play as hard as we can. And then we'll
I think there's something to that. I have no idea. That's just speculation on our end, but like, I think there's some validity to that. Just like, no,
definitely speculation.
There's probably some like relief to just being like, well, hey, we don't have to keep this under wraps anymore. Like this is out there. And I think it's good to be like, I personally, like, I mean, just because of like a lot of that stuff, it's not just like bad strategy and stuff. It's like just actually being a bad person to people. And I don't stand by that. I know you don't either. So I always keep that at the forefront, but yeah. Point being, like, it's been a year and it's been a weird year too, but
if it was going to happen in a year, this is the year to do it.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that would be the way to put it.
No major free agents in the offseason they have to worry about. They're going to be like, screw this. You know, obviously the pandemic happening, the weird shortened season and all that sort of jazz. I mean, like, you know, if it's going to happen, this is a pretty good one.
Yeah, definitely, man. I agree. So I got one last question before we get out of here that is not related to the Pacers at all. Are you a resident?
Got some food. Is a food take coming
this
in?
This is not a food take. Are you a resident?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. All right. I can't believe we're not going to argue about food in this
podcast. We can argue about food, but like, I do have to, like, are you a Resident Evil fan? Because I've been playing Resident Evil 8 recently.
No. Really good. I've never played a Resident Evil
before. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, this totally, you know, tanks what I was going to talk about. But yeah, you should check it out. The new Resident Evil game is great. Most of them are third person. This one is first person.
I saw the Barney thing.
It's very off the rails. It's a good game, though. I enjoy it.
Yeah, I should check it out. Did you see the Barney mod?
There's a Barney mod?
Yeah, somebody replaced all the evil zombies and whatnot with Barneys.
I will have to check it out because that sounds
good. Yeah, it's pretty good. Oh, I've been playing Returnal. You know Returnal?
Returnal? I don't
know. It's a game for – it's a PS5 exclusive.
Oh.
And it's a roguelite game, so you have to start from the beginning every single time.
Oh, God.
And then there's like five worlds. Yeah, it's fun for a while, and the combat's awesome. If you really like the haptic feedback on the controllers, it's a good showcase for it, and it's really fun to do that. But it's kind of like, to beat the game, you have to like go without dying and play all these, like, there's like five boss levels, and of course they all have like 12 moves, and you have to memorize the moves and all those. Yeah, you have to play for like 3.5 hours without dying straight through to win the game. I don't know if I can ever just, you know, care
enough
to do that.
That's a long time to sit there.
So I went back to Fall Guys and played Fall Guys all the time.
Fall Guys is fun. I love Fall Guys. I watch my buddy play Fall Guys sometimes. I'll never forget the very first time that I ever played Dark Souls was like, that was just awful. It's awful. Like, it's fun in some regards, but at the same time too, it's just like, it's too much. It's the what is it? Because I think I was playing Dark Souls. I want to say it was Dark Souls 3. Where it's like the gargoyles that come to life, and you have to fight the gargoyles on top of like that. It's either a castle or a church. I can't remember. And I lost it like 15 times in a row. And then after that, I just deleted the game off my console. Like, I can't handle this stress. Cause I just come away like tense and feeling like I'm going to have a heart attack, even though I'm 23. And it's just like, yeah, no, it's not good for me. So no more Dark Souls.
Yeah. It's interesting where if you have to put too much into it, I can't get there. I played Rocket League all the time.
Oh, Rocket League is great. I love
Rocket League's great, but the problem is that I leveled up to a point where I have to really focus to play well, and I just got to a point where I just didn't want to do it anymore. Yeah. And so they won't let me, like, I guess I should create a new profile or something, but like, I just want to go back to people being pretty good and just have some fun, and like, you can't choose that. That's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
I don't like, if you make one little mistake, someone's going to yell at me at the chat, and I just don't want to live
I do not like having the chat in. Like, that's one of my least favorite things. people are very passive aggressive in the chat, and I don't appreciate it.
What a save.
Yeah, every time you let up a goal, what a save. I'm like, oh, thanks, dude. I wasn't paying attention.
It is, however, it is extremely satisfying to score the winning goal.
Oh, it is. What a save.
Especially in the final seconds and like eight, what did it get like muted in the chat because you hit it too many times?
Yeah.
I gotta admit, I've done that a few times. So, you know, I can't be too high and mighty about it. But yeah, I've been playing lots of Fall Guys. I need to get a new, like, real game, so to speak.
I'm trying to think if there's any, like, real game that I've played. I mean, I don't play video games that often, to be completely honest. Not that much anymore, but, like, I just miss Halo 2 was the days for me, man. I think I was in middle school when Halo 2 came out. No, I was, because Halo 2 came out in 2005, so I was 8. So I played Halo 2 late because I didn't play it until middle school. But that was when I, like, first really got into games. And, yeah, I think I honestly want to go through and, like, replay. Have you ever played Halo?
Yeah, sure.
I was guessing, like, Halo's great.
I had a 360. That was the only Xbox I ever had.
Oh, okay. So Halo 3 then.
So didn't play a ton. You know, I didn't have video games growing up. Like, I played at friends' houses. I never owned a system. And so it took a while. Some people, I'd go, like, college dorm, I'd go to some, you know, they'd be playing a first-person shooter. The two sticks was a little hard. I was a little behind everybody on that because everybody had a few years of experience on that, and I hadn't gotten there yet, and that made it real hard. But now I could do it enough that, like, I'll play some shooters, and so, like, as new ones come out. But that's when one element of video gaming that I avoided for a long time. So I've never played, like, Halo straight up. I played Portal, though.
That's Portal, like, is orange box. That game makes me mad, man. I'm so bad at, like, problem solving games because I just, like, think about it. I'm very I don't think I'm, like, that analytical. I mean, I guess I am analytical in some ways, but, like, I just get, like, very frustrated when I'm trying to relax and play a video game and they're like, well, how about you figure out how to get to this point? And we're going to make it just hard enough that you have to really think about it. I'm like, well, you know, I don't think I want to.
That's definitely, like, that. I mean, that and the sequel, two of my favorite video games of all time. It's just, it's very relaxing to sit back and just think about the puzzle and figure it out and all that sort of stuff. I find that sort of, I find that relaxing.
I prefer to throw my headphones on and play Doom. That's kind of where I'm at. A little bit of a change up from Portal, but yeah. So Doom is pretty great.
I've been playing a Doom Eternal a little
bit. Oh, it's so good. It's a very vibrant and gory, but
yeah,
I enjoy it.
It also has an excellent use of the heavy metal soundtrack.
Yes.
Because I'm not a metalhead by any means, but like, in the right context, if I'm playing Doom Eternal or if I'm at Kuma's eating a giant burger and drinking, like, a dark beer, like, in those I don't want to listen to anything else but that in those situations. And and, like, NFL games, I think we probably use that's a fairly metal friendly atmosphere, I think, at least for highlights and stuff. I think that a lot of times the music choices in pro sports is pretty poor. I don't want to listen. I don't want to see a slam dunk and then listen, like, pop country. Like, this isn't. No, that's not.
I just never want to listen to country, but that's a whole other story. But yeah, no, I don't know have you watched any Grizzlies games this year? Because they have the best in arena music easily. They played, like, the Shaft theme song. They play, like, just a lot of, like, I think they played, like, some Woo one time. It's great. I love it. Anytime that there is some, like, really good hip hop thrown around or something jazzy, I'm there for it.
Yeah, and, you know, Memphis is a legendary music town. I'm sure that's probably a part of it too. Indianapolis is not.
Yeah,
we've definitely had you know, some.
Hey, Freddie Gibbs is from there. So,
and West Montgomery, you know, play a little jazz guitar.
I don't know who West Montgomery is. To be completely honest.
Oh, really? Okay, he's the greatest jazz guitarist of all time.
Okay,
he's
I don't know that.
He's from Indianapolis, and actually, Indiana Avenue in Indianapolis had a very historically significant and thriving jazz scene for a while. Of course, especially at the time that happened, if you have a neighborhood that is thriving with nothing but Black people, it doesn't last for very long, which is very unfortunate. And, you know, that's Oscar Robertson and Christmas Addicts got, it was in very close to that area too. It's always been my, if I got plopped into a Netflix pitch meeting and I had to pitch something, it would be a TV show about both Wes Montgomery and Oscar Robertson ascending the fame at the same time in the same area of Indianapolis, and the inevitable kind of poo-pooing from the city that ruined that neighborhood that should be a historical landmark that is famous throughout the world, but is a trivia fact now. It's just really sad about that, the way that evolved in Indianapolis, which is, but that would be, they've actually, but you know, Matt and CJ Walker was involved in the Indiana Avenue scene. So they already have one TV show about the era, but it's a little bit earlier than that. But that would be my Netflix, the sequel, if you will, to the wildly successful Matt and CJ Walker Netflix TV show.
Well, I'll have to look that up, man. I didn't know that. That's really cool. I definitely need to check that out.
It's forgive me if I get this. Echoes of Indiana Avenue. Kyle Long does a show, and I believe it's there's a podcast form of it for WFYI, the local PBS station, that is a whole history of music in Indianapolis, especially things that are not as well known. Almost always black artists in the city, which is pathetic, but pathetic that we don't know, and the fact that they have to revive this in a historical context. But he has a whole series of shows, and that focuses a lot on that particular scene and area of town. So that'd be a thing to check out. And Kyle Long's a good guy to know for that kind of information.
Awesome, I'll definitely check that out. Well, Dave, this has been a really good time, man. I always enjoy getting to talk. I'm glad you reached out about doing this. Do you have anything fun coming up that you want people to know about, or just anything cool going on in your life?
No. Well, okay. So I, like I said, I've been playing pickup. If you live in the area and you go to the Monon Center, I'm trying to play a lot at lunches during the weekdays. So
get dunked on by Dave.
There's no dunk. It's a no dunking gym. It's a
gym. Oh shit.
I don't think that I'll ever get back. In my athletic prime, I could dunk a women's basketball. It was small enough that I could palm it, and it was just enough that I could just get it. I could at least Leslie dunk it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Remember the first dunk ever in the WNBA?
Yep.
That I could do that. No dunking in there. I've been riding my bike a lot too, which is a lot of just trying to get outside, you know, keep the mental and physical health going. That's I'm trying to put a 100 miles a week on the bikes.
Oh wow! Okay, all right, you got me beat there. I've been me and my dog have been. He's right there in the background. We've been walking nonstop because he's very excited about being outside when it's nice out. So it's been good, man. It's kind of crazy that it's summer now. Just about like we're pretty close to summer. I was talking to my dad the other day, and he's like, "Oh yeah, summer's coming up." I'm like, what are you talking about? Like it's spring just starting. Like, oh wow, I guess about a month from now. So it's kind of wild.
Now that everybody's getting, hopefully everybody is getting vaccinated up and all.
Got my second one coming up in 1 week.
Oh good. Okay, yeah, which one are you getting?
I think I'm on Moderna. I can't remember. I know I got it. That's so it'll happen. But
those things wrecked me, man.
Oh, I've been the first one was fine, so I'm interested to see how the second one goes. But yeah. I'm not playing.
I couldn't even lift my arm up on that day.
Oh yeah, my arm was really sore. I will say that it was a lot more sore than it usually has been for any vaccination I gotten. But worth
now that everybody's getting vaxxed up, it's nice to have like plans.
Yeah,
like that is, I think, the thing that'll. It just feels like it's been a timeless. Not in a good way, but like losing track of what day of the week it is, and we've been in this mode for over a year now, and I think that once we finally get to like, hey, you want to come over next week? That's gonna be the benchmarks that start to like get the wheels turning, and it doesn't feel like it's summer because it just doesn't feel like it's anything.
Yeah, no, it's kind of wild too because I just was thinking about it. I was like, wow. You and I have never actually met in real life because we've only ever gotten to do Zooms because it has been life outside. So, we'll have to do that sometime this summer.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll get a cookout going. It'll be fun.
Awesome. Perfect. As long as there's no grill marks on it, we're all good. So,
Are you sure you don't want to argue my feelings? So why don't you, What's the deal? Why don't why are you integrating?
I just think grill marks are a false. They're a falsehood. Like, there's nothing wrong inherently with grill marks, but I think there's a suburban idea that's come about that if there are grill marks on something, it is cooked right. And I just vehemently disagree with that. Like, anytime you see something from Longhorn Steakhouse on TV, you have like the crossing grill marks. I'm like, that just, it does nothing for me. It doesn't mean anything to me. It actually might mean that you just cooked the shit out of something unnecessarily. So I,
interesting. So I'm trying to think of a situation, like, it might be, hey, it's not the best cooked thing, but it's still like the Maillard reaction. It still matters that you're caramelizing that part of the beef. I specifically got a grill with wide cast iron marks, not because I necessarily wanted to have the which, by the way, it matters. The way that your food looks affects the way that it tastes. It just is what it is. It's just how the human brain works. And so, like, you get that nice cross pattern on it, then it's, you know, people are like, ooh, look, it looks pretty good. So that matters a little bit, but it's also you caramelize the meat. Like, it, like, that matters, I think, that specifically to the taste. There's a, because you can't, obviously, if you get a cast iron pan and you're doing it on the stovetop, you can get a lot of caramelization on it. But, like, yeah, if you're doing it on a grill, that's the only chance that you get. I think that this, the most underrated thing that people get grills. They get grill plates that are just very, very thin, and then you can't really get as much of that. It's, you know, that matters. It's part of the reason why you grill it a little bit. But
So we've been talking for long enough. I think I can get a hot take off without getting too much heat on the timeline. And this is a very, very hot take.
Hi to the five people that used to listen to
it. Yeah. I have all this. I don't know why I've thought this, but ever since I was a kid, I will start by saying I'm not going to try it. It's not something I've ever thought about trying, but I've always thought that raw meat looks better than cooked meat. Like, it looks
okay.
It looks tastier than cooked meat. Like, I think that if you see
chicken,
no, not chicken. Okay. I'm talking about beef. Like, chicken looks disgusting uncooked, but like, I've always thought like a porterhouse or ribeye that hasn't been cooked yet looks way better than a cooked one for whatever
reason. It does have like a, it has like a, because we, in pop culture, we show it raw.
Yeah.
In a way that we don't with chicken and other meats. I think that that's a, because if you showed a steak, like an emoji of a steak, it's going to be an uncooked steak.
Yeah.
You know, it's never a cooked steak, which is kind of an interesting observation that I hadn't really thought of about until now. Are you a sushi fan? Are you a sashimi
fan? Oh, I love sushi. Yeah, I love sushi. Sashimi's great.
Okay.
I just wish it wasn't so expensive is the only thing.
I know.
But then if it wasn't so expensive, I'd probably be getting food poisoning because the meat wouldn't be as high quality. But
it is glass. Like, if you can get a giant sashimi plate, it's hard to not feel like $1 million after you ate that, in my opinion.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. When I lived in Columbus, there was this place that I went. I think it was like the cheapest thing you could get was like $30 because of how like high quality the meat was. And yeah. I mean, you're living in a city, single, working full time, and you had, I mean, it's like, dude, you, like, I lived in an apartment that I shared with two roommates. So I paid like, what, like $400 a month in rent. So I felt like I was Bill Gates pretty much. So I would go there like once a month just to treat myself with some of my friends. And now I think about it, like $30 for a meal. What are we doing here? But yeah, now I really want sushi, man. But
sushi's good. And you know, ramen's good. That's why I get a lot of rare steaks, medium rare steaks. That's part of it too. You're trying to get that raw taste of it in there. So I guess it's not that hot of a take, I suppose. Because you don't meat without you don't prefer meat without grill marks. You just think that it's maybe a little overblown. Because I mean, honestly, if you want a really, really good steak,
Would rather have something cooked in a cast iron pan. Frankly, I think it's better in a cast iron pan than on a grill.
Yeah. I don't think that's crazy.
Yeah, you know? Like, people who cook burgers on grills, just like, oh god, I get that it's probably more convenient if you have like a giant party and you want to cook for like 30 people, then by all means use a grill. But if you're cooking for yourself, just use a cast iron pan. It's better. I'm not going to give you time for a rebuttal. You're not allowed to rebuttal that.
If it's a smash burger, if you make smash burgers at home, I'm with you. Because you literally can't do that on a grill.
Yeah.
But if you got that big, thicker one, I don't know. Maybe, but you know what? I guess you got to come over for a cookout. That's what
definitely, man. Awesome. Well, Dave, this was a great time, man. I really appreciate this. To everyone listening, of course, follow Dave on Twitter at MillerTimePod. Follow me at MSchindlerNBA if you don't follow me already. And most importantly, just have a good rest of your day. Thank you for listening. Mm-hmm.